there. Welcome to Freaks and Creeks. It's a Dawson's Creek podcast. It's the show where four millennials who missed the boat 25 years ago take the dive for the first time. Join us as we experience the series with a fresh perspective and see if our adolescent experiences match up with Dawson and the gang. My name is Cody.
I'm Stella.
I'm Mallory.
And I'm James.
And this week, we are talking about season 2, episode 20, Reunited,
and it feels so good.
I know that song.
But before we get into that,
we got one piece of Cape Side correspondence.
Yay!
Come on, y'all. Give us some letters.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, we had a lot, and I just was so excited that for a couple episodes, I was reading like three things per episode, and I guess that's my own fault. I should have savored them, you know. Yeah. But I was just
read
so
one
excited.
Word per app.
There we go. Yeah. Is that what you listeners want? That's what
that
we'll
what
do.
You want?
I'm considering writing a program which will make ChatGPT write us emails and then send them to us.
Honestly,
using
yes.
fake names. And nobody needs to know, except I just revealed my secrets.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you sure that's not happening already?
Oh my God.
Sorry, guys.
Dead internet theory.
All right. We have an email. From our number one beloved listener, Christine.
Woo!
Specifically, this one is for me. It says, this one is for Stella, so she won't cry, but it can be for everyone. I was finishing up season 2 when it suddenly came to me that if you're watching Creek Fan 3's edition, aka the one that has
True Love Edition,
the original music, if you're watching the blah, 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 it made me remember that season ended with my all-time favorite Alanis Morissette song, and I was wondering if you would possibly consider doing something a little different next season. At the end, along with ratings, Peak Creek recommendations, but also your favorite song, even if you have to look up what songs were in it. In my opinion, all seasons from 3 to 5 are the best.
Ooh, wow.
Strong words. Some removed music will blow your mind.
Wow. Wow.
So I feel like
I'm scared.
I'm interested.
The Macarena?
Yeah, I'm really curious what Alanis Morissette song.
Yeah, isn't it ironic?
You Live and You Learn.
That's the only two songs I know from Alanis Morissette, and I'm sorry to say that.
You learn.
Whoa, Jagged Little
Alanis?
Pill.
Are you here? Alanis, is that you? Surprise, our first guest ever on the show.
Yeah, we got her.
Is she Canadian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, Christine, that's a great idea. I think I'm speaking personally, I love to speak about music, so I'll take any opportunity I can to talk about it. My only hesitation is we don't always watch the True Love Edition before a recording, so I'm a little scared that I'm going to say something and then y'all fans are going to yell at me.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to look up the lists and, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to play it by ear, y'all. Yeah, we'll I don't know if it's going to be an official thing, but we're going to definitely still talk about the songs.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Especially on an episode like this one.
We'll talk about the songs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yep, yep, yep.
Also, how exciting is it that we're just 2 eps away from being at the end of season 2?
Fuck, can't wait.
David Lynch would say, can you believe it?
We got to get a David Lynch reference in the first 5 minutes of every episode. And we just squeaked under the line.
And it's crazy. DL said that he would be a part of our podcast, but we got Alanis first. It's crazy. Yeah, I thought he'd be the first.
Me too. I mean, we did have him on early on when, you know, just to talk about the weather, but I think we may have removed that from the version that we put out there.
It is Friday. 1 second.
Well, that's it for Cape Side Correspondence.
Thank you, Christine.
Yay. Yeah.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks for coming through.
Yeah. You know, these other listeners, they don't have shit on you, right? Yeah,
we love all of our listeners.
Okay, yeah, we do.
We love all of
them. I'm sorry. I should probably stop shitting on everybody else.
Christine, you're a true blue. You've been there since the beginning.
Yeah, you have.
Thank you for your support. Episodes were 3 hours long.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so this week we are talking about season 2, episode 20, Reunited.
Wow.
Okay, this episode aired on May 12th, 1999. Dawson and Joey's romantic dinner together is spoiled by his parents' presence.
Mm-hmm.
Pacey suspects Andy of seeing someone else.
It certainly does.
Zoinks!
This episode was written by Greg Berlanti.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Directed by Melanie Marin.
Woo! Mark Marin's wife?
I'm not sure if I'm saying that last name right, but Marin.
But
Marin.
Hey, the first
three. Mayron.
Yeah, Mayron. This episode came out in May.
Oh my goodness.
Whoa.
Is this the number 23?
Is she a figment of Greg Berlanti's imagination? Wow.
Well, Cody, will you tell us about this episode? Tell us what happens.
You know, in most TV shows, the A story and B story, while different, are thematically intertwined for narrative cohesion. But not in Capeside, baby. Instead, this episode is half part The Parent Trap, half part A Beautiful Mind. Does it need to make sense? No, who fucking gives a shit? Let's go. So our girl Andy is going through it after Abby Morgan's untimely demise. She's colored her hair to a dark brown. She's extremely moody. She's having visions of some hunky stranger reassuring her that everything's cool. She's wearing pajamas meant for a child. Hey, we've all been there. And even though it's Friday night, Andy has to take care of Mommy McPhee and Pacey's down to help. At the mansion, Andy goes off to chat with that hunky invisible stranger who is revealed to be a hallucination of her dead brother, Tim. Yikes! Pacey catches her chatting it up in the kitchen with Ghost Tim, confused since, in all actuality, she's all alone. She breaks down, angered by Pacey prying, and wants some space. Once Jack enters the picture, it becomes a two-on-one of helping hands. Jack puts it together that she's talking to Ghost Tim, and Pacey the hero goes into action when Andy locks herself in the bathroom. Pacey gives her the ultimatum. Choose him or Tim. Thankfully, she chooses Pacey. With Andy in her room, Jack tells Pacey that he's worried she'll end up like their mother, who didn't receive help psychologically until it was too late. Pacey agrees it's time to call Daddy McPhee. Our hero visits Andy in her bedroom and reassures her that everything will be okay as she sobs and expresses her fears of losing both her mind and Pacey. But hey, let's turn that frown upside down, huh? Joey and Dawson, together again, huh? Our titular hero has planned a super secret fun dinner date for the two lovebirds. You little schemer. They head out to a very fancy French restaurant, but uh-oh, somehow a Leary reservation for two has already been occupied by none other than Mr. Manmeat and Dawson's teacher and arch rival, Nicole Kennedy. Could it be any more awkward? Well, yes, it can. They decide to eat together, and folks, you might remember that Nicole had essentially described Dawson's film as being a visual and auditory hellscape, and he's still peeved. Our hero can't help himself from being a little moody shit. And guess who joins in on the ribbon? It's Joe, everybody. Joey. She too tells Nicole to fuck off with her Hollywood elite attitude. And you bet this is making Dawson as happy as a clam. Simultaneously, Jen and Gail are hanging out. Well, you might remember that Jen was kicked out of Graham's house, thus her living with the Learys. Since Gail is the surrogate mother to all abandoned Capeside girls, the two hit it off and plan to make their own dinner. Gail admits to not knowing if she's ready to go to Philadelphia for her dream job because, in truth, she still wants Mitch. But, uh-oh, while deep in conversation, they burned up all those Yumotomo snacks. What are they to do? Of course, they head to the same fancy French restaurant. Let the games begin. While Gail and Jen are sitting pretty far apart from the rest of the crew, everybody is eyeballing the shit out of each other. Jen and Joey find themselves alone at the bar and come up with a sneaky little plan to get Mitch and Gail alone. And it works. Mitch and Gail end up having themselves a nice slow dance to their song.
Reunited and it feels so good.
And it works, guys. Mitch and Gail are having the time of their lives slow dancing, bodies pressed up against each other. It's all feeling pretty good until they go to their separate tables. All is good in Capeside, right?
Right.
Well, after dinner, Gail is feeling pretty good. She tells Jen that she thinks it's just a matter of time before Mr. Man Meat comes crawling back. But uh-oh. From afar, they see Mitch and Nicole share a romantic smooch. On the Capeside boardwalk. Looks like we're back to Frown Town, folks. Elsewhere, Dawson and Joey share a little Midnight Creek row, lit only by the moonlight and their passions for one another. Dawson broaches the subject of maybe, possibly raw dogging, and Joey likes the sound of that, but thinks they should maybe wait a little bit. Our hero is okay with it, and they continue to smooch as though their lives depended on it. God.
Oh, God. I don't want to talk about this episode.
Why?
You didn't like it?
Didn't love it.
Yeah.
Didn't love it.
You know what's interesting? If I were to remove Andy seeing Ghost Dead Tim.
Yes.
And make one little change to this narrative and instead just have it her talking to herself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think this would be one of the best episodes of the series.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
I agree.
Ghost Tim stuff and Andy being cuckoo bananas. Yeah. This is like the lowest of the low. This is like late 90s. She's fucking crazy. Yeah. Didn't take her pills.
Yep.
It's the worst. It is so bad.
And I appreciate what they're doing by talking about grief and by talking about mental health and blah, blah, blah. And I think, it's nice to see Pacey be like a supportive boyfriend who's there, blah, blah, blah. However, it's so fucking heavy-handed and done like really offensively. And I feel like it was done offensively even for the fucking time that it's like they undercut any message that they could have had in this episode.
And
I just feel like also Andy's complete 180 in her character from the beginning of, well, actually from excluding the cold open, but from the first real scene onwards is just like, what the fuck are we supposed to think about her? Like she's so mean, so bitter, so like wild. It's just, what the fuck?
And it's such a complex thing. It's like they're trying to show something that is so complex because like mental health and grief, they're two different things. I mean, they're together, they play together, but there's also like, you know, like she can have mental health issues and not be going through. So it's like, it's just such a complex thing that is done wrong.
And it just sucks because like we said, like last episode, we all felt that the grief was like really represented pretty well and accurately. And this just feels like complete 180.
It's a cartoon.
Yes. Yeah. It is.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, they put her in those fucking pink little kid pajamas at the end. And it's just like, what are you guys doing? What is this? What the fuck is this?
There's like many other ways to show infantilization and regression.
Exactly.
Did anyone notice what the pattern on those pajamas were? It's the I Love Lucy Chocolate Factory episode, kind of like the idea of like, you do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Oh, interesting.
So I thought there was actually, there's symbolism in that, but
I didn't know that.
It wasn't just to infantilizing her, but it was also like the pattern
that they chose.
So there was a deeper, I think there was a deeper choice in that costuming, but not, you know,
right. Say that that's giving them a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Which I love to do. I love to give these guys credit. I mean, they're geniuses.
I like to give costuming credit. Hey.
No, for sure. Yeah. I did think those pajamas were cute. Like, Mal, I'm going to, sorry to spoil this, but that is your next birthday present.
Love I Love Lucy.
Yeah, that is a really great episode of I Love Lucy. It's pretty funny.
God, I just want to watch I Love Lucy.
Yeah. Well, I'll be our next podcast.
Yes.
That would be so fun.
Yes, actually it would.
But it's like, it's so, like the last episode had a lot of, not that the show is like a nuanced show, but it did such a better job of showing grief in a very human, naturalistic way. And this is a cartoon. This is her seeing the ghost. And I just had to look it up just to make sure, but The Sixth Sense did come out like 4 months after this. Can you imagine how fucking awful it would have been if it was around the same time?
My God.
I see dead people.
Yeah.
It's just, God, it's so fucking corny. And also I wanted to ask you guys, when we watched this, I asked Stella and we were kind of like, what were they really going for here? But at least in the episode description, were we supposed to think that this was like a new kid in school that was like her confidant?
My biggest problem with this fucking episode is the way that they have him first appear and the way that Andy looks at him. Like, if she knows that this is her brother, why are they like, oh,
eyeball?
Hi there, cutie patootie.
It didn't seem like she was like, oh, he's cute.
I know that the reason they're doing that is because they want
us to think it's a twist,
right?
Still.
But it's so fucking stupid and cheap and like, why? Just why? Why the fuck? Why?
Yeah, especially when you have a sequence where she goes to her car and then he's just sitting in the car, that it's like, well, obviously that this isn't just like the new kid in school.
It really felt like they initially shot this with the intention of this is a hallucination of the ideal guy for Andy. And then they were like, oh my God, I have an idea. What if it's Tim? Middle of shooting. And they're like, okay, so we can cut a couple of those scenes short and let's just reshoot the scene in the car where, and we'll remove the part where he like plays with her hair or something like that. Because I mean, fuck, how else? Oh God, it's disgusting. It's fucking gross.
Yeah, it really sucks.
Yeah. So when it was revealed that it was Tim, were y'all surprised?
Mal called it immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also did. And I don't know if it was because it was something I had remembered or if it felt predictable to me. I don't know. But yeah, I like didn't feel that surprised.
Yeah, I wasn't that surprised.
I mean, I think the way that they do reveal him for the first time, right? She turns around and sees him in the hallway. It feels weird anyway. Yeah. And like, nobody is interacting with him. He's just kind of there staring at her. There's nothing natural about that. Mm-hmm. And we've never seen this character before, you know? So like, I think it raises flags immediately for the viewer, which just begs the question, why did they think this would be a good twist?
Mm-hmm. It's really frustrating. And especially because like the only kind of glimpse into Andy seeing things was seeing Abby in her bedroom. And so like, that's the evidence that you're going to give for us later on to be fully invested in this belief that she like sees dead people. And that's like a part of her mental illness.
Yeah.
Which is so gross.
Yes.
And like, I'm fine. I think with making media weird, I think it's important for media to be weird and like have like interesting, like playing with it, but like they had not built this into the world yet. Mm-mm. And it was so haphazardly put together and it looks awful and it's offensive, frankly, for people that do have maybe schizophrenia or any kind of like mental illness where they like are hallucinating seeing people that may have passed or whatever. Like it's just weird and it's bad.
And I think
tone deaf.
I think another weird thing, there's a fucking billion weird things about this, but also it felt weird that like just the episode previously, Joey's like, I hope that God sends my mommy back to me. Like this weird, like hoping to have dead people come back. And then that is then what we see from Andy in the very next episode. That felt like kind of like weird. Like they were kind of trying to shoehorn that in an episode ahead. They knew it was going to be fucking weird and shocking for us. But then I really wish, and I think that there's a couple ways that they could have done this. Well, there's a million ways that they could have done this better, but I genuinely wish that we had been seeing Tim in the background of shots this entire season.
Exactly. Yes. That'd have been so good.
Like, let's have a couple scenes where she like walks by him in the hallway and is like, what's, you know, not even like, what's your name, but just like sees him.
Or at least have sequences of her like mumbling to herself
about like brown or whatever. Like that was just random too. Yeah. Like, okay, dye your hair brown and then brown's your favorite color because his name is brown. And
that is,
and then Pacey's also all wearing all brown in the whole episode.
Yeah. The only thing I really liked about that is him, like when she colored her hair is like, you don't look like you. So it's like, oh good. Like we're like getting like a little bit like, that's cool. Like if that's where
it
ended
way too far.
Yeah. They pushed it way too far. Also, I did like when she was in the bathroom, she shattered the mirror. Yes. She had shattered the mirror in the episode with the election. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's like a cool motif with her. Like her identity is always shattered. Like you have good things in the episode to talk about her mental state, but cartoon ghost brother is the worst fucking thing. And I hope like if you're listening to this episode and you hear me say cartoon and you didn't watch the episode, it's not literally a cartoon. It is a human actor.
It honestly would be better if he was just an animated fucking guy in the background. Like, well, hi there, Andy.
Roger Rabbit type of 2D cartoon. Yeah, that'd be cool.
So towards the end of the episode when Andy locks herself in the bathroom, Tim is asking her to choose basically between him and Pacey. Did y'all think that this was trying to hint that like she's thinking about killing herself?
That's how I read it. Because of their reaction, because of Pacey and Jack's reactions, thinking that she's in there alone. Mm-hmm. What
with
is she
shattered
gonna
glass.
Do with shattered glass? And they're scared. They're clearly like worried and trying to break open the door. So I think like that was.
And the whole idea of like a
the ghost Tim being like, yeah, stay with me, come with me. Yeah. Come with me. Yeah. So I think they're hinting at that, but it's also 1999 and I guarantee WB was like, oh, you're not going to have a suicide in this episode.
No, yeah.
I thought it was very heavy handed and I mean, I think there's probably multiple ways you can read that, but yeah, that was my first, I was genuinely worried watching it. I was like, oh my God, this is getting way too like
intense
for a fucking daytime kids TV. Well, I guess it's not daytime, but a primetime kids show. Yeah.
And the thing that's always been in the back of my mind is I think like a long time ago, we talked about that Lego set for Dawson's Creek and the characters that were featured with the core four plus Jack. And I remember being like, why isn't Andy there? So like, that's always been in the back of my mind is like, does Andy leave the show? And then watching this, I was like, are they going to fucking kill her off? Like with a suicide narrative or something? Dude. That'd be so horrible.
Hope not.
Which is still possible.
Like, sure.
It just didn't happen here, but good fucking God, that better not be like where this is heading.
Yeah. This whole, I mean, storyline with Andy in general has been so up and down. Yeah. Just like, okay, we're going to talk about mental health. Like, cool that we're like incorporating this into the narrative and then having these wild extremes where it's just like, doesn't feel believable, relatable. It's just so, such a weird decision.
The only thing, and I'm going to be speaking out of my ass here, so look, I'm sorry if I say something offensive, but the only thing that I think is potentially redeeming in this is I thought it was kind of powerful that Andy's hallucinations were trying to isolate her, that they were showing that and that she was, you know, falling for it, right? Like that is something that I think happens, right?
Oh, 100%.
These hallucinations that you're having, these things, they tell you that this is all you need. Yeah. And then you isolate yourself and you fall deeper and deeper and deeper into it. I liked that tiny nugget of it because we got to see Andy, who is, from everything else we've seen, a very logical, very reasonable person who does battle with mental health, and how quickly she falls into this trap. Now, did they do it well? Fuck no. Is it offensive? Fuck yes.
Yeah.
I kind of think it does have some utility to show that for potentially people who maybe didn't or might, sorry, who were or might be experiencing that in their life. It might be nice for them to see that on screen.
Yeah.
That's where I'm speaking out of my ass. I have no fucking clue if it is nice for people to see that. I have no clue if that is appropriate to show. But that's the only silver lining I can find there.
I think you're onto something because it's refreshing to see a character that outwardly in school and her relationship with Pacey is a very strong person. And I think it's important to see strong characters deal with something that shows their vulnerabilities. And taking out Ghost Tim visions and the hallucination stuff, like I do like the beats of what's happening in this episode and like what she's actually dealing with. And to your point, like how she's isolating herself and the real journey is like Pacey being like, no, like there's a community that loves you and supports you and we can be here for you and we're going to work through this together. Like all that stuff is great. It's just the hallucinatory thing and the way that it was like pushed so immediately without like anything that could make this logical for that character that we haven't seen that before is like why it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's also like, in this episode, she refers to herself as a wacko. In the last one, she refers to herself as a helpless lunatic. And then just like her, I mean, it's like, I get some of the defensiveness, but it's just like, so such an extreme defensive reaction to when like people are trying to take care of her or like be supportive. And then the self-deprecating lingo and like shaming herself with the mental, it just like is
too much.
I think it's on point for sure because of her mom and her mom's mental health after the loss of Tim destroyed their family.
Yeah.
And so like that's, if that's her biggest fear, of course she's going to like be like as extreme as possible of wanting to separate herself from that and be like, well, I'm not a wacko because I see what happens to wackos.
She's probably heard her dad say things mom that just like that. So she is maybe repeating what she's heard other people say.
And again, this isn't like justifying her language or what I'm just saying, like that makes sense for her character to do that. If Pacey or like Dawson were being like, you fucking wacko, like you're insane. You know, like that would be like completely different, but it makes sense for her character to be like really triggered by that and want to.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of her mom though, what the fuck Where is she?
Yeah, exactly.
Like they are screaming in
she? Did they? She's supposedly still around.
We have no idea. Oh, okay. They've never shown her any. I mean, they never said anything about her.
I thought they maybe mentioned
going
that she
somewhere.
Going, she. No.
Not well, that I know.
I mean, the whole reason they were at that house that night is because Andy's like, I have to take care of my mom on a Friday night.
So they're down there screaming about Andy locking herself in the bathroom. There's breaking glass. There's a breaking vase. And we don't even, what is she doing?
I guess
maybe she's like so heavily medicated. Like that's what's happening.
Yeah. Cause in the episode that she was first introduced and like when she's talking to Pacey and everything seems kind of normal-ish, the end of that episode is like Pacey putting mom to bed with Andy.
That's true.
So I wonder if, I mean, like, we don't know. This is like us, it's all conjecture. We don't really know what the fuck is going on with her mom, even what her mental illness is.
Right.
But we could guess just based on that one sequence that she spends a lot of time in bed.
Yeah.
That's it, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
She clearly isn't walking around the house or doing anything.
But even, I guess, I don't know. Now I'm going to backtrack because the first time she was introduced, she was gardening outside.
Yeah. And she's in Mollier's market that one time, just like doing shopping. Yeah. So like,
yeah, I feel like the last time we like talked about, or like mom was talked about in the episode, dad was like hiring a nurse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But then it's like, okay, if a nurse is there.
Yeah. Then why do they need to give up their life to take care of her?
Yeah.
I think there's just so much wrong with this episode. And I liked maybe to find another silver lining, Jack being like, we got to do something. And the only thing I can think to do is call my dad and showing that like, despite their differences, we need to call him and get him involved. That.
This isn't for us to take care
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Like, that is a message that I think Pacey needed to hear.
Yes,
definitely.
And I think that's like a message that anybody who's dealing with those things needs to also hear. Don't put that on your shoulders. Like call the people who can help, call anybody who can help.
Yeah. It shows that Jack is like a really strong character. It shows a lot of strength in someone to be like, this fucking person that I hate that like ruined my life is the only person that like can help right now. And that takes a lot of guts to say and admit. And also, it's like so great for Pacey to see that too through Jack and Pacey. I don't know. I kind of like this idea of like Pacey the hero being challenged more.
Yeah.
And it was really great that he like did succeed in helping Andy in this episode. But at the same time, he doesn't have all the answers for her and he's not going to be able to save her.
Have a question for, sorry, did you?
Oh no, I was just going to say, look, it was just like so heartbreaking, you know, to like watch Pacey have to like be
save the day yet again.
And that I think feels that piece of it felt like a little bit more relatable of just like, I think a lot of us have been in maybe a similar situation where you're in high school and you have a friend that's like extremely depressed or like going through something and you like feel like you're the only one that gets it. And that I feel like hit home for me and like made me really feel for him.
I loved Pacey's speech when he's like, look, I know Tim says he needs you, but I need you more. And so does Jack. I thought that was just like a really powerful thing to hear, a really powerful thing for him to say. And I thought he just handled that really wonderfully.
Yeah.
Like yet again, Pacey is just fucking awesome.
But the thing that I'm wondering, no, he is awesome. I fucking love it. But I'm wondering like, where did this endless patience come from?
Dude, right?
For real.
Well, like he says, my life started when I met you, which is like, okay, that's fucking cheesy as fuck. Yeah. And also that's putting a lot of pressure on her in a time that she does not need more pressure piled on her. But I thought, you know, it clearly worked and that's great. What do we think though about that scene after she wakes up in bed and Pacey is like, you know, she's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. What's going to happen to me? And Pacey's like, we're going to figure it out. They hug. And then we see Pacey has this like forlorn look on his face.
I think he knows that there's like no going back now.
Yeah.
Like they've crossed the threshold for like, she's in a mental health crisis and there's like, you can't erase that from your memory. This is like a pretty big deal in the relationship. So it's tough.
Yeah.
And he knows that there's not a lot of options.
Mm. I'm wondering if we're seeing the beginning of the end of their relationship.
Here. Definitely.
Like he's going to support her through this, but then like you're saying, you can't unsee that. You can't unremember that. You know, you can't forget that. So has their relationship effectively come to a stop here, which I don't know. That's kind of sad that they're choosing to portray that as well. You know, Like when you finally reveal who you really are, you're going to lose the people who love you.
Yeah. I mean, like, I hope it's not that. I hope that there's going to be a little more nuance to the relationship disintegrating if this is it.
I'm going to change the subject to taking a break. So we'll see you on the other side.
Bye.
And we're back, and I want to talk about the cold open.
Yeah,
me too.
Oh, so good.
So fun.
Fuck. Why did we have to wait this long to get that, first of all? And why did they choose this fucking episode to put that on?
This, if you took out the Andy stuff, like, this is like one of the strongest episodes. Yes.
The parent trap shit is fun. The cold open is awesome.
I think they're putting it here because it's toward the end of the season and they're like, part of it is just getting, you know, like getting ready for like that end, like the crescendo of the end of the season. Right. And they're all together and it's Dawson's Creek.
It also feels like they're kind of making fun of themselves.
Definitely. Oh yeah, definitely. They are because they're referencing other like teen, you know, 80s and 90s.
90210.
St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, what is St. Elmo's Fire?
The 80s movie with some of like the Breakfast Club folks, right?
Yeah, it was like it was like a lot of the Brat Pack people are in it. And who directed that again? It's the guy that did Batman and Robin.
Christopher Nolan.
Joel Schumacher.
Oh, okay.
It's a Joel Schumacher joint, and it's just like about a close-knit friend group and like the trials and tribulations of like the relationship and dating life. It's fine. But it was so fucking cool to see this group of people hanging out together, being teens and hanging out. The pillow fight is a little weird.
Weird as fuck.
But like, I liked them talking about the click thing. Like, are we a click? Like,
I love, so Pacey goes, there's been a lot of hanging out lately. And Jack's like, like when? And Pacey says, like now, for instance.
Which I love because like we have never seen them hang. Yes. There hasn't been a lot. And
yes. So yeah, like, it felt like very, himself. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt self-aware that they were being like, oh yeah, you guys probably have never seen us all in the same room together. So
They also talk about, I think, the Peach Pit.
Yeah. Yes, that is a 90210 reference. I've never seen it. I just looked it up. Yeah, so it's like the diner that they go to.
Yes. And
apparently.
Yeah, I looked it up, but I was like, when we were also talking about them going to this French restaurant, I was like, it would be really nice if they did have like a coffee shop or like a diner that
like
they all
just like a watering
hole
that they went to. Yeah. Like,
I think that's supposed to be the Ice House, but then they never really use it.
You know,
it's or Moliere's Market, which
or
they also
the
never
jazz
use.
Jazz Club. But yeah, Moliere's seems like the most, like it would make the most sense because it's kind of like a coffee shop, but we haven't really seen a ton of it. Maybe hopefully we get more of that.
I hope
so. In other seasons.
Because, I mean, we watched the first episode of Gilmore Girls recently and a rewatch for Mal and kind of a first watch for me. But what I was struck by is how much of an identity the show, just from that very first episode that I saw, how much of an identity the show gets from Luke's Diner.
Yes.
Exactly.
Just from having that as a fucking place, a location that's lived in and real and the town goes to. Like, that is what Dawson's Creek is really missing is, like, we have Capeside High.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that affects, like, some
barely,
of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have nothing else.
It's almost like Dawson's Room is the, in this scene especially, it's like the one thing that we see people hanging out in and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really weird that they haven't set that up from the start because, I mean, Friends does it so well with Central Perk and then they get to have their own adventures in their own apartments. But like, you always know that like, oh, when they're in Central Perk, that's where everybody is.
Right.
And you have such a huge cast here. Or it's not even that big, but like having like the 5+ main characters of the show, it's like so easy for them to like have a hangout spot that you see them in every episode and you know that that'd be home base.
Remember when they had the video rental store?
Yeah.
Like why haven't we gone back there?
Maybe this is a tease that we'll get that next season. Like we'll get a place where they all hang out and we'll get more of them hanging out together.
Yeah, you know what it kind of reminds me of is like all the media that we watched that was shot during COVID when like actors couldn't be in the same room anymore. And like, that's what this feels like. It's like, I bet some of these actors didn't even talk to each other the entire time they were here.
But yeah, it would just be like so easy to like have a hangout spot for like where they went to after school and all hung out.
I mean, we we had that when I was a kid. We went to the Borders bookstore, which had a Starbucks coffee shop, and everybody would go. It was like, you know, when you'd leave campus, you'd have to drive by it or walk by it, you know. So everybody went there. So after school, everybody would just end up there at some point in time. And it was fun to go and hang out and like work on some schoolwork and then see who would kind of come and go through the day. I remember looking forward to that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just weird that we don't get that here in any meaningful way. I really hope we get that because I think it is a kind of like I already said, it's a missing piece. It's a missing ingredient here.
Well, speaking of missing ingredients in the show that felt very apparent in this episode was the cinematography, the direction. It was so awesome. It was so much better than it's been in like any other episode. Yeah. Even like the opening shot of it, or the opening shot, but like the opening sequence that ended with the bird eye view shot, like circling them as they had their pillow fight, and also doing the slow intro of the song bleeding into the intro. It's like, wow, this has so much fucking momentum. So, it felt so good. And then also like, I mean, like, I think like static shots are good in shows, but here in DC, it's a little stale, but here is like handheld shots. We're following Pacey going down the stairs to find Andy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're walking around the school. It felt kind of like West Wing. You're like doing walk and talks. I was like, hell yeah, dude. Like, this is what's been missing from this show. It makes it feel so much more alive.
Yeah.
It sucks that it's used here and with the Andy stuff, which fucking sucks, but everywhere else, I was like, ooh, like, oh, this feels good and snappy and fun. Yeah.
That first scene when they get the hair reveal on Andy and Jack and when Jack and Pacey and Andy are walking down the courtyard into school, I was like, fuck yes. Like, give me this. Yes. I love it. And then it felt like there was a weird, you know, like even it felt like it had even inspired a little bit from Curse Smith, the actor who played Jack, when he's like, she did it to herself. And he kind of walks off.
He was so great in the scene. Sorry.
No.
Oh, the other thing that I noticed was in the scene, like it was such a little thing, but Curse Smith yawned as like, that was like so realistic, like as a high schooler and it's early and you're getting to school and you're like, you know, and it was just such a small thing, I loved little stuff like that.
As Pacey is like trying to be like, oh, your hair, it's just not you. And he's like, stop it. Yeah. You know, like all these little moments that I don't know if they were there previously, but it felt like it was new. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just because it was shot new. It made you pay attention more because more shit's coming at you.
Melanie Mayrin, who directed this, if you even that's how you pronounce the name, but I wonder if it was them that was like, we need to like, I need to breathe some life into what's been going on, at least from what they've seen. Because this is the first time they've directed Dawson's Creek. Mm-hmm. I didn't look them up on IMDb. I'd love to see what else they've shot.
Me too, because this is great. And I hope that this was something either that the show decided to do or that they brought to the show and then they're going to take with it moving forward.
Yeah, for real.
Because it's... I hope that they don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, the baby being this new defined style with the bathwater of this fucking awful episode. But I, you know, like there's another silver lining in that.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into like the parent trap of this episode, there was just one other thing I wanted to talk about with, in relation to Andy, You touched on it briefly, Mel, but Andy saying that she called Tim Brown.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The reason I couldn't pronounce Timothy, so I called him by my favorite color. So that in itself is like, what? How'd you get there? How'd you?
Why not just be like Tim? His hair color is brown.
Yeah.
But like, why not just call him Tim or any other nickname? Why is your favorite color? And why is your favorite color brown?
I know.
I'm not a speech path. I don't have any kind of like, you know, communications or anything. But how is brown easier to say than Timothy?
Or Tim.
Like when I was a kid, I had to go anyway. I knew kids who had issues with words and sounds. Common ones were R's and W's. Yeah. So what the fuck? Timothy is not like.
To be fair, she might have been born without a lower jaw.
Interesting. But like,
okay, so my best friend growing up was Joseph, and I couldn't say it, so I called him Joe Fish.
Hell yeah.
It has his name, you know, there. What? Yeah.
Do you think that's how Country Joe and the Fish got?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all from me, baby. Wow.
That's cool.
Oh. But yeah, it's just the idea of going from Timothy to Brown is such a ridiculously silly.
Doesn't make a stretch
sense. On the Brown subject, I couldn't tell if they were like making a joke of this whole brown thing as to like costuming put Pacey in all brown. Mm-hmm. Like literally he was wearing a brown sweater and then a different color brown shirt, which like I would never put together. So I was just like, oh, okay, why?
Maybe they're just big Ween fans. And this is like the whole thing, like make it brown, like Brown Town. Yeah. Like,
is there a song called Brown Town?
Yes, but I mean like the whole thing with Ween is like keeping it brown. It's like a lingo they use with Ween fans because their music is so
look
fucking
how happy you look.
I love Ween, but it's like their music is so fucking stupid. It like breaks through stupidity and becomes incredible. So, so their genre is just like brown. So if you go to like a Ween show, everyone's like, yeah, that was brown as fuck, dude.
Like, maybe there's more meaning to it, like brown, down to earth, and is missing that. She want like she's
grounded. She needs to be grounded.
Again, there giving them way too much credit.
I know.
Really, they were like, well, we need to have her have a physical change. So she's going to dye her hair and brown. So her favorite color is brown. And that's it. That's, you know, like, I feel like that's what the decision was. Because
if her favorite color was pink, would she then dye her hair
pink? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because what kid is like looking at the box of crayons and is like, blue,
exactly.
Green, that's weird. Nope. Brown, though. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, poopy color.
Yes. I get to see my favorite color every day.
I'll say it again. Ween. Ween does that.
What can brown do for you? So Andy must be obsessed with, what's that, UPS? She's exactly. She grew up to be a UPS driver.
She loves boxes.
Yeah, she loves
boxes.
That's
why she loves Pacey and brown.
That's true.
It's looking good.
No offense to anybody whose favorite color is brown. It's a beautiful color, sure.
I mean, I love earth tones.
Yeah.
You do. But yeah, I wouldn't say.
I'd rather go for orange over brown. Mm-hmm.
Especially, yeah, as a kid. Like if that came from her childhood, what your favorite color, like, it's just, yeah. I don't.
It's like my favorite color is gray. I'm like, okay, I'm worried about you. Why?
Yeah, I love the idea of this little girl growing up being like, my favorite color is brown.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, they break their arm and they get their pink or their green cast. And she's like, yucky.
Also, I feel like we've never seen her wear brown. So.
No, she's worn so many yellows and shades of yellow. So weird. Funny. So strange.
Okay, so we find out that Jen is living at the Leary household.
Yes.
I do.
Funny reveal.
Yeah, I like
deadpan.
I like the relationship between Jen and Gail throughout this episode. I thought it was kind of sweet.
It's so weird that Gail is just the surrogate mother for fucking everybody.
Yeah.
Joey.
If you're a girl with mommy issues, go to Gail.
Yeah. She even tries to be mommy to Abby that show, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, okay, cool. Gail, I guess you're a nice person who cares about kids.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was nice.
She always wanted a daughter.
Yeah, that's exactly. True. And it was nice to have like some longer scenes with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just chatting. And
it was interesting to see Jen with like a parent figure and not butting heads.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to see Gail like know how to parent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a healthy way.
I wonder if they did that as a way to kind of dodge the Jen's got problems with authority label that they were, or like corner they were kind of painting her into.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like a good message to send to like if parents were for whatever fucking reason watching the show with their kids, they would have last week saw the example of Graham's being a terrible parent.
Right.
And then here seeing Gail being like a good parent, like meeting your kid halfway and like trying to learn from them.
I also have a costuming note for this. These scenes with Jen and Gail at home at Gail's house, at the Leary house. She's wearing like more light pastel clothing and is softer, and she kind of feels like softer, like she's more comfortable in this situation with Gail, and
she's not
definitely
wearing
a change to
I was just going to say, she's not wearing a leather jacket and like a spiked collar. Or, like she
and
fucking
red and
would
black
be.
And like, you know, contrast.
She's got like a chartreuse cardigan on.
Yeah, it's like very, very soft, light denim. And she looks comfortable. And
it reflects her well throughout the entire episode. Jen is like a soft presence and she's having fun.
And they changed to go to the restaurant, but that's like, you know, situational. Right. Like they're going out. But I thought that was a good costuming moment.
I mean, this show has little, I don't know. Like they do good things sometimes. And I think where they consistently do well is the costuming. Like
they really do.
For one, it is pretty iconic. I think the costuming of Dawson's Creek, the whole look and style of Dawson's Creek is like bigger than Dawson's Creek in general, but then we consistently are finding like deeper meanings in what they're wearing, how they're wearing it, and you know, the ways that they use clothing. I think it's cool. And as somebody who is pretty ignorant to all that stuff, it's nice to see it done well.
Yeah.
Or it's nice to pick up on the way that it is being used.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They do a good job.
So getting into like the kind of love triangle date part of the evening, early in the episode, Gail says to Jen, you cannot connive or entice love. It has to come to you.
Yeah. Which is great. That's why it didn't work out in the end.
Yes. Yeah. So I was going to say, you know, then we see, you know, the kids really trying to construct this romantic scene for them, and ultimately it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
I have so many questions about this restaurant. Okay, so weeks ago, Dawson calls and he makes a reservation for two, according to what he says to Joey.
Great.
Sounds like a kid calls.
Hi, mister. Can I make a reservation for my 1 month anniversary with my girlfriend? Maybe.
As really good Dawson.
Yeah, it was. Thank you.
Been working on that. And then at some point, Mr. Man Meat calls and he makes a reservation for two.
Hey, this is Mr. Man Meat, big, ripped, huge dick, and I want to have a date.
And they are like, they don't mention, oh, you've already got a reservation.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, cool, whatever. They move on. But then when Gail and Jen decide to show up, they don't need a reservation. They just fucking walk in.
Maybe.
But they get seated at a table.
They do. You're right.
I also was like, what the fuck? But then the waiter says something like, well, because you're our favorite anchor woman or whatever.
Yeah. So it's maybe like preferential treatment.
Yeah.
It's like Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Like Tony walks in, you have a table.
Well, you're famous here in Cape Town.
But it's like they made a mistake.
Yes.
So like somehow they could get those two seated, but not these two.
And I love
it's like Tony Soprano. I'm telling you.
I love that the way that they make it right for Dawson is and Joey is like, yeah, let's just force you into this walkway between tables. Yeah. You're fine, right? Like, okay. I get their kids, so they're probably like these fucking kids. They're not gonna buy anything. Mm-hmm. We got no tip coming our way.
Did Mr. Mammy say he made a reservation? Because I was thinking like, okay. I thought it was that like Dawson made the reservation and then like Mr. Mammy and Nicole were just like going to see if they could get in, and then like they like said their name and they took Dawson's reservation or something like that. I don't know.
I mean, we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah. But confusing.
It is very confusing, and it's just, I mean, it's convenience for TV is what it is, of course. Because I just can't imagine that whoever was taking reservations didn't mention the fact that they already had a reservation when they called to make it. It just doesn't.
It's convenient TV shit. Yeah. But you know, like as corny and stupid as this is, I had a really good time watching
it. Oh,
yeah. It was well done. It was fun. It was fun to watch.
I agree.
And everyone performed really well. Like it was a great sequence, and it was refreshing and kind of jarring to go from the Andy story to this over and over again. But every single time it came here, it was a breath of fresh air. I was like, oh, thank God. Like, let's see what fucking happens. This is so fun.
It's just like, such a funny decision to juxtapose those things where it's like, dude, so bad
choice.
It's like rom-com Parent Trap vibes. Bum, bum. and then you have this fucking mental health crisis going on.
So, Dawson is a horny little fuck, and he's like, I think out of all the characters, I think he's like the grossest when he's like horny, but like, I've never seen him hornier than when Joey started talking shit about Nicole Kennedy, and like the look in his sultry little beady eyes being like, like, ooh, boy, Joey is standing up for me, was pretty fucking disgusting, but also interesting. And with Joey's character always being under the shadow of Dawson, and earlier in the episode, she's like craving spontaneity. That's why they're doing this date. And like Dawson's trying his hardest, which is still a limp dick version of what he should really be doing. It's funny that like she really can only grab his attention if it is relating to him in a way. And it's like, how long? This is not sustainable. How long is this going to fucking last? The only way to really get his horny attention is by joining in his world and like discussing his world, being a part of like the film stuff, like doing the only shit that he fucking cares about. Like, he'll never, ever, 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 ever do anything for her. Like, if this was like, if the tables were turned and it was like about an art thing, Dawson would just fucking sit there and eat a breadstick. Like, he would not be giving that much of a shit.
Well, your doodles are cute, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, back to what we were kind of discussing last episode, there's always something getting in the way of their relationship. Here, they're, it's like fate is conspiring against them because they're supposed to have this big romantic night out. They get there. It's kind of spoiled. Dawson's all, he's fucking ripping Miss Kennedy a new one. And then Joey pulls him aside and is like, hey, you're ruining this whole night. This is supposed to be about us. But then she joins in on this, which I get why they're doing it, because her and Jen have that conversation. But like, it's a big 180 to have happen. I don't know. It's just like the show is telling us that they're not going to work out.
Over and over again. Joey has to know that she'll always be second place to his ego. Yeah. Like, there's never going to be anything there.
Yeah.
It was also weird just like watching Mitch's reaction, or just like sitting back while all of this happened.
Yeah.
Like, cut it out, kiddo. Like, and come on.
He had this weird, I was trying to read the expression on his face, but you know, Miss Kennedy is like, well, yeah, maybe I'll get you a connection in LA. You know, there's blah, blah, blah. And Dawson's like, you mean the town that's going to rip me apart? She says, you know, I'm sorry if I like jumped to conclude, if I was too harsh, but I was trying to be honest. Mitch's expression there, he's kind of like, yeah. Like, what?
So
this
weird.
Is your son that is telling your new date / girlfriend / whatever that she is being like harsh. Like overly harsh, and you're like, fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. Rip my kid a new one. Like, what?
It was weird.
Weird, yeah.
And I felt like he was just like watching it all go down.
So passive.
Joey was just like really going hard on her.
And it's hard. It's like, you have to remember these are 15-year-olds, and it's still so funny that we have these like, you know, 25-year-olds playing these characters.
Right.
But I would love to have seen this play out with actual 15-year-old actors and see how funny it is seeing like a little like a braces mouth filled shit just being like, oh, Nicole Kennedy, you think you're a big Hollywood hot shot? Yeah. I'd be like, shut the fuck up. Like, that's all it is.
I loved when the maitre d' brought over a bottle of wine and he presents it to who? Dawson and Joey. What?
What?
Like,
these two toddlers?
Yeah.
Come on.
And nobody even acknowledges it except for Mitch, who kind of looks over at Gail like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you're yelling, baby.
So the kids trick them into, you know, a little dance and a romantic moment with
reunited and it feels so good.
And we can't keep doing that. We're gonna get sued.
Yeah.
Oh shoot.
There's a cover.
Cut it. But yeah, I mean, like, what's her name? Gail. She is all about this plan, or like she, you know, she plays along and is into it. But as I mentioned earlier, she says that thing where you cannot like connive or entice love has to come to you. But then she like goes along with this and she thinks it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately it's revealed that it didn't work. And she's like so shocked.
Right.
Yeah. Which was confusing.
It's weird how fucking confident she is after she's like, I'm going to get him back.
I don't need to go chase my job because I've got my man back. And the weird, I mean, it's not weird. It's poetic. The poetry of Gail seeing Mr. Manmeet and Mrs.
Kennedy.
Thank you. Miss Kennedy, smoochy in the same spot that Dawson saw. Wait, who? Joe? Which?
Someone kissed there.
Yeah, that same exact spot. Can't remember who, but God, how poetic.
Was it Pacey and, no.
No, it was.
Jen
and Dawson. Thank you. It was Joey seeing Jen and Dawson.
Right.
Smoochy, I think, or something. Yes. Slow dance. They were slow dancing.
Yep. Can we insert a clip of George Lucas talking about the Star Wars prequels where he's like, it's like poetry, it rhymes.
Yes, we can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but then she just storms off up the street and Jen looks so angry.
Ugh. Yeah, whoopsies.
Oopie doozy.
So the final sequence when they're on the boat rowing around town.
Oh my God.
So horny. Ew. Dawson is salivating at the thought of closing the deal.
I was fucking like squirming, writhing yeah. in my yeah. skin. Fucking disgusting.
And then does Dawson call Joey vulgar?
He says, "You vulgar little yeah, thing," which has never made me wanted to throw up and crawl inside my body really? More.
Oh man, it made me so horny.
Just I was hard about this entire episode. Yeah.
Thinking about it right now makes me like, ugh.
I know.
Ugh. You dirty gross. Little.
Ugh. But okay, so he is very explicit. He wants to take two tickets to Bonetown, and she is like, no, thank you. And because she thinks they're like too young or whatever, they're not ready for it, which is thank fucking God that he's like, okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
But do we think this is setting up the narrative that Dawson will cheat on her with someone that is willing to have sex?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Are they laying the breadcrumbs now?
I don't
want him to fuck this relationship yeah. up. I want it to be yeah. him and his
do
fault.
That to
yes,
her?
Yes, yes, he would. Of course, he would.
Well, either he would, or he will break up before it happens. Yeah. He'll be like, "I can see that you're never going to take this seriously. Yeah. You wanted to have sex with Jack, and you want to have sex with you know." I can see I that like he would break up tantrum. And,
yeah.
happening, but
I see that if, more than like cheating on her, like breaking if, up, and then I don't know.
I think it's gonna be cheating.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm putting my money down right now.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he cheats on Joey with Jen while Jen is living in his house.
Oh,
yes.
You know, he's gonna he's gonna get all horny. He's gonna be tugging that snake and then, you know, he's gonna think better. I don't know. I just can see it happening.
Totally.
Please don't call Dawson's dick a snake.
Sorry.
It's already been canonized that it's wee wee
or Mr. Peanut.
Or Mr. Peanut. Yeah.
Gonna be unshelling. Yeah,
please
that
DM if you want to see those facts.
Yeah, I wonder how much. Yeah, like how long Jen's gonna be living there.
By season three, she'll be out.
End of the show. I'm gonna say.
You think so?
Season six, she's still living with Gail.
Was it
the roommates?
Was it you who said her and Pacey should move in together?
Yeah,
because Pacey's home life is so fucked up.
Yes, yeah. They had referenced. Well, they're
sorry by you. I was speaking
to
Mallory.
I think in season one they were. Talking about
yeah you're
Pacey
right
was like,
on the boardwalk
to, wanting
Pacey was
to
trying
get
to move
apartment.
and then she had referenced something about like not wanting to live
right
with Grams and that yeah I thought oh my well, god why don't they live together
they and yeah. then Jack gets in there
yeah
aww. That'd be so fun yeah. The three misfits of the show
that would be cute yeah. And then they wait no I was gonna say they move into the ice house but they should
still
move
could.
Into the back room of the ice house
yeah, they could
yeah that's true.
Okay, well, does anybody have any final words before we lay this fucking shit heap to rest?
There was a song that played a lot
at
the end.
Oh my god, dude.
Called I Don't Know by Blair Packham. That, fucking god, one of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life.
And they played the same 30-second snippet of it like 12 fucking times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They played it as Mitch and Miss Kennedy were walking into the restaurant. They played it again at the restaurant. They played it as Dawson and Joey were fucking rowing their boat. They played it when it's just like, Jesus.
The worst.
They were making the most out of their money.
Okay, but here's another thing about the music that I thought was very interesting. So there's another song that plays a couple times, and it's by a band called Plank Eye. And this is in the Amazon streaming version in the United States. So this song plays in the episode when Dawson and Joey are walking into the restaurant. And then it does a transition where it shows the house band of the restaurant playing.
Oh my god! Yes.
So it looks like that band is playing this like cool, like moody indie rock song. And I was like, damn, this place is lit. But so I was like, oh, like yeah, that's right. We have the link to the original audio. I wanted to check it out. So I checked it out. And in that version, there's no music playing when Joey and Dawson are walking up to the restaurant, but it does do the transition of when it shows the house band playing. Instead, they play a really bad Bare Naked Ladies song.
Oh my god.
So in that version, it looks like they're playing it's like a Bare Naked Ladies cover band. But what a weird thing to like have a band play while you have non-diegetic music playing to make it look diegetic.
And
it's
so odd.
I don't know. Maybe I'm like just too, maybe, but they're a jazz trio. Dude, it's a fucking bass player, a drummer, and a keyboard player. And they're trying to pass off as Bare Naked Ladies or as Plank Eye. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm being like persnickety, but like anybody would be like, they're not fucking playing this music.
Yeah, it's really weird to like match that. It doesn't. It's also interesting too because like now I think we're seeing some pretty clear differences between watching the original version versus this one where they've like inserted different songs into it because it does completely change the mood. The song that is playing when they're walking into the restaurant and in the restaurant is moody. It kind of had like fits an atmosphere of like, ooh, like what's going to happen tonight? Like something is kind of like off and interesting. And I don't know, it kind of sounded like Band of Horses or something.
Sure.
But with Bare Naked Ladies, like it's so fucking different.
That would be if... Do you remember what song it was?
No, it's not. Oh my god,
I wish it was. That would be so fucking.
But it was like an upbeat.
If I had a $1 million.
It's just like it's like some upbeat fucking like happy-go-lucky like BNL song. So it's so different than what was originally intended, and it completely changes the mood of what you're seeing.
Also, there's like people dancing, which is just even weirder to have a bare naked lady. But then these people are just like they're like swaying.
They're just moving their upper bodies. There's one shot of Jen and Gail at their table talking while people are dancing behind them. And I use the word dancing lightly. Like they're literally just like moving their shoulders from left to right as they're like staring at each other. Like,
yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that's the funniest thing too, is like when they shoot that, there's obviously no music playing during that. And sometimes you get situations like this where people are just like swaying around and there's no, like, I don't know. Like, I know like David Fincher is really big on it. Like, he's like, oh, there's going to be music in the sequence. And so we're going to have a metronome set up. So everyone knows exactly like how you're supposed to be dancing to this, blah, blah, blah. And here it's clearly the opposite of that. Like these poor fucking extras had to stand around for 12 hours just swaying.
In a stinky dark room. Crammed. I mean, it was crammed full too. Like they put like 15 people in that little 4-foot by 2-foot space around the band. I mean, I just feel so bad for them.
Isn't it weird that this is still the same episode where Andy had her?
I know. Throughout this discussion, I'm like, oh, I keep forgetting.
I know.
It just feels like, so disjointed. Two different episodes.
It makes me, when I think about the episode, I think about alternately how amazing it is and how fucking terrible it is. And it makes it so hard to, as we're soon going to do, come up with a good rating because I want to give it fucking 0 stars for how fucking shitty and offensive it is. But then I think about all the funny things that happen. I'm like 5 stars.
Yeah.
Well, shall we get into ratings and recommendations?
I'm giving it a 3 just for those exact same reasons. Like I fucking hate the Andy storyline. I think it's tropey and lame. As I said, it would have been way more effective just to show Andy like talking to herself, like having the imagery is so awful. And it, just like makes something that is very serious into something that is really cartoonish and gross. So that all fucking sucks, but I love how the show is shot. I love how it's edited. Yeah. I loved how it's blocked. It looks really good. It has momentum. It breathes. It's cool. There's, it flows really well. And I really, really liked the Parent Trap French restaurant stuff, even though it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No. It's really good entertainment and it's written in a fun way that is exciting. And I like to see that they're like building up to like other storylines that are coming off of this. It feels good. I thought that was really fun, but hey, remember what I said? This is the same fucking episode as the Andy Mental breakdown. So that's why it's a 3. Yep. My Pea Creek moment is that bird eye view shot when they're pillow fighting and going up with the intro to the, I was just like, oh, this is so exciting. This is fun.
I feel so bad for Dawson that his entire room is covered in feathers.
Oh, he didn't pick up a single feather.
God, he's going to be, when he moves out of his parents' house in like 40 years, he's still going to be finding feathers in there.
I will give this episode a 3.3.
Whoa.
I don't know.
Billy Strings.
3-ish. I really like that we're getting more world building. And also loved that we have more interactions between different unexpected characters like Jen and Gail, Pacey and Jack, Joey and Jen, Joey and Nicole, which we didn't really. I mean, we talked about that, but even Nicole and Gail, which we didn't talk about, that's quick scene. But I love like that melding of different characters, and actually kind of brought me back to like that first scene where they're all together, and you know, it just it was kind of like representative of like having different characters interact with each other, and not just with like the couple that they're supposed to be in.
Sure.
So, that was cool. Peak Creek moment was also the intro with Pillow Fight. I feel like what's more Peak Creek than referencing other teen 80s and 90s movies and just like making fun of themselves. So yeah.
I'm going to give it a 2.75, I think. I mean, there were some like fun pieces of it, but again, it just felt like so disjointed. And the fucking mental health stuff was just too much for this little lady.
Yeah. Do better.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think we need to make it explicitly clear that this isn't just bad because it's dated.
Yeah.
Because you know, everything is dated instantly, but it's because even in 1999, this was bad.
Yes. Yeah.
Very bad.
My Peak Creek moment was the cold open.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to agree with Stella here. My rating is a 2.75. I would rate this a negative 50 if I could, but, the thing that saves it is the cinematography and the way it felt. It made the awful parts of the episode bearable, barely, because there was something interesting going on, something new going on. But yeah, it's a piece of shit and I hate it. So I hope I never have to watch this episode ever again. If I ever rewatch this show, I will skip this one. It's just, that's the reality. Peak Creek moment of the week. I was going to say the pillow fight, but everybody is saying that and I have to be different. So, I can't remember exactly the interaction, how it happened, but the waiter comes up to Mitch at the restaurant after everything is kind of like blowing up in his face and is like, how's everything going? And Mitch just goes, he just like gives this like funny laugh, chuckle thing. And it felt awesome.
Doesn't he like hand in the wine, the bottle, bring me more.
Yeah. I thought that was funny. And, so that's my Peak Creek moment of the week. All right. Recommendations. That new gum you like is coming back in style.
You're so good at that.
Thanks. All right. So my recommendation this week is a book. It's actually a book series, but I'm going to recommend the series in general so that I don't have to do this like 40 times. I'm only a couple books into it, but I'm recommending the Discworld book series by Terry Pratchett. The specific book I'm recommending is The Color of Magic. It's the very first book in the series. Though a lot of people, if you like look up Discworld or whatever, they actually recommend starting with either the third book or the fourth book. Apparently the first two books are just like very tonally different and he kind of like hits his stride. But The Color of Magic, it's from 1983. It's a fantasy comedy book by Terry Pratchett, who you might know from things like Good Omens. He's worked with Neil Gaiman and a lot of other kind of humorous writers. It's the first book in the Discworld series, and he describes it as like an attempt to do for the classical fantasy world what Blazing Saddles did for Westerns. I think that is like pretty on the nose. It's really funny. It's really silly. It follows the character of, I don't know the pronunciation. I think it's Ryan. Rincewind, I'm not 100% sure. He's a failed wizard. He initially tries to con this guy who is just like bleeding money everywhere. He's throwing gold coins out like crazy. And he's like, you're an easy mark. I'm going to get my money. Turns out that guy is like, basically, he's the world's very first tourist. And he's from a far off land. And basically Rincewind ends up getting stuck with him, having to give him a tour of the world and act like a tour guide. They get into all these funny hijinks. It's just a fantastic book. And it's short. It's like 200 pages long. I couldn't put it down. I immediately picked up the second book. I'm in the middle of the third book now and I can't stop. It's really, really good. So go pick it up. The Color of Magic is the book. Or if you want to jump into the third book, that is Equal Rights. It is interesting. It's about gender politics and magic, and it's about effectively feminism being introduced into the world of Discworld. It's really cool. Sounds like it would be kind of cringy. It's not. It's great. Even though it was written in the 80s, it's like way ahead of its time. Or if you want to start at the fourth book, that's called Mort, and it is really funny as well. It takes place from the character of Death, you know, like the god of Death, his perspective as he goes around and claims souls. So great.
I've always been interested in starting Discworld, but it's intimidating because there's like 30 books plus books. Yeah.
They're so easy to read. Like I said, I just picked it up and couldn't put it down. I think I read it in like a week, and it's been a long time since I've finished a book like that fast. And it's written very approachably, and it's just fucking funny. I laughed out loud so many times reading this book because it's fucking stupid and silly, and it's just great.
All right. I am going to recommend the new album by Sierra Farrell, or Farrell, not sure how to say her last name. The album is her second full-length album. It's called Trail of Flowers. If you are not familiar with Sierra, she's been pretty, like, big in the bluegrass country Americana scene in the last few years. This album is really solid. The songwriting's great. She worked with producers and co-writers who have worked with Gillian Welch, Brandi Carlile, Zach Bryan, Alison Krauss, Dwight Yoakam. Yeah, it's a great album. She's about to be going on tour starting in April for the duration of spring and summer. I'm sure she'll be selling out. So if you are interested, I would say go support her and get a ticket or buy the new album.
I saw Billy Strings gave her a shout out recently, so that's awesome.
She's wonderful. I love her.
I am going to recommend a board game called Tiny Towns. James gave this to me for my birthday. And the premise of the game is you are the mayor of a tiny town in the forest in which smaller creatures of the woods have created a civilization hidden away from predators. This new land is small and the resources are scarce, so you take what you can get and never say no to building materials. Cleverly plan and construct a thriving town and don't let it fill up with wasted resources. Whoever builds the most prosperous tiny town wins. So your town is basically represented by a 4x4 grid. Each person gets a little grid, and then you place resource cubes in like specific layouts to construct buildings, and then each building scores victory points in like different ways. So it's fun because like one person has to call out the resource, and you basically are, you have to take whatever they're calling out. So there's a lot of good like strategy that you can build upon. It's fun.
You have to place them in specific, the cubes have to be in specific patterns in order to be converted into a building. So, you know, you can have the best plan you want, but if somebody calls a resource you weren't prepared for and you just don't have anywhere else to put it, it can fuck up your entire game, and it creates a lot of fun friction. And we're going to be bringing it to a future retreat that friend of the show, Ryan, and their partner, Lauren, are going to be arranging. So I can't wait to play it with all
Ryan.
Of us.
Hey, Ryan.
We know you're listening.
Yeah.
You freak. Also, I think you found it but after looking up what I recommended a couple episodes ago, which was, what was the game?
Oh.
I forgot now.
Oh.
It was the legacy game, My Island.
My Island.
Yeah, so it's different, but if kind of similar where you're like, you have your own like little town that you, thing that you're building, so.
Yeah, similar.
It was so funny. After you recommended that, like later that week, I was at Barnes & Noble and saw that one and then the other one.
My City.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
My rec this week is the podcast Sleep With Me.
Nice.
Yes. A show designed to help you fall asleep. Yep. It's hosted by a guy named Scooter. And each episode he tells an extremely boring story with meandering tangents and it totally zonks me out. I have trouble falling asleep all the time. And so
that's not true.
Yeah. Well, I mean like I like for me to like fall asleep, I need to have something in the background, to keep me from having racing thoughts. And, and usually like I'll fall asleep to a podcast about something I'm interested in, but then more often than not, I am so interested in what the people are talking about the podcast that I want to listen to. Like I can't go to sleep. But this one is great because he covers topics like his Trader Joe's grocery list or recapping episodes of Great British Bake Off or trips to IKEA. And he has a really unique, soothing voice and he's super charming. So yeah, the next time you're having anxiety while you're trying to go to sleep or you have insomnia, I think this is like a really great show to listen to.
I love his sleep voice.
He's like,
Yeah.
He has like a really gravelly voice.
It's like ASMR in like a really weird way.
Yeah,
then they're going to take out the butter. Oh, too soon for that. I'm going to have to do something else.
It's so great. I don't know if he still does, but he used to like have little songs and stuff like that that were from his sponsors. Like he used to be sponsored. Anyway, they used to be so fun. I used to love and look forward to them. So I would like the first 10 minutes I'd put on and be like, yay. And then before I knew it, I'd be fucking out. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Cause you can't follow what he's saying. That's what he's doing. He's designing it in a way that you cannot follow it. Your brain is going to tune out whatever you're hearing. And I guarantee you, this is a James Ramey guarantee, you'll fall asleep before the end of the episode.
I can't imagine staying awake through it.
Yeah, if you do, I'm sorry. Yeah. that's got to be boring, but fantastic rec.
All right. Well, y'all, next time, the penultimate of season 2, season 20, episode 21, changes. As Dawson looks for a subject for his film class final, Andy and Jack's father insists on moving them away from Capeside.
Howie. Can't wait.
Cannot wait to finish this season.
Oh, me neither.
So
fuck.
So close.
All right. Well, that new guy you like is coming back in style. Thank you all so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, go ahead and subscribe. I'm sure you already are. And join us as we continue to set sail through Dawson's Creek one episode at a time. If you want more content, join our website. Join it. www.freaksandcreeks.com/. Find us on Instagram @freaksandcreekspod or write to us at show@freaksandcreeks.com. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.